our first speaker, Chris G. from Bullhead City.
I'm an addict named Chris. Is that good? You can hear me okay? Okay. Yay. First, I'd like to say thanks to Nakona One for this opportunity to be of service, period. And it's funny because I'm looking around. A lot of you, some of you I know, and all of you that I know are of service. It's funny. I'm guessing that everybody in this room is of service. That's usually how these workshops work, you know. Anyway, I need to shake a couple things out of my head. My husband and I are camping down the road, and we have our little dog with us, and it's a little awkward because normally, like, when I say I'm coming to a convention, I'm here for the whole weekend. I'm kind of just in and out for this opportunity, and he was here this morning, but they are not pet friendly here for our little dog. But anyway, she's like our baby, but I needed to shake that off and just get that out. The importance of being of service, and there wasn't, I don't think anyone raised their hand for being super new here. I was introduced to service in Narcotics Anonymous very early on. I got clean in the Little Apple area of Narcotics Anonymous in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Actually, I got clean in rehab, but I went there to begin my recovery. And I wouldn't be standing here with this opportunity if it weren't for service. I might still be clean if I wasn't of service in Narcotics Anonymous, but I certainly wouldn't have the fulfilling life that I have. We have a date this week too, by the way. Anyways, I was thinking, don't forget. Anyway, you know, and I was thinking about my service today and how did I end up here and why did I get this opportunity, because God is good. This is why I got this opportunity. But, you know, much of what you're going to hear come out of my mouth is going to be my personal opinion and what has worked for me. There will be maybe a quote or two from our literature regarding service, and we'll go from there. But the first thing that I thought of was when I first got clean, there was this expression, and we still have this expression, that you can't keep what you have unless you give it away. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I was desperate. I had come here in a state of desperation, self-hatred, self-loathing, all of that stuff, and I just wanted to not feel that way anymore. You know, and I wanted everything that this fellowship had to offer, because I heard that catchy little phrase about, you know, I gave it 110% when I was using. And so when I got here, I needed to do at least that much, if not more. And especially if I wanted to feel my first, actually, let me back it up. My first experience with service in Narcotics Anonymous was an H&I presentation at the institution that I was in. And the woman that came in, the piece about her was what I wanted in my life, because there was so much chaos going on outside and on the inside, and I wanted what she had, and I had a minimum of days clean for sure when I saw that. So that was my first interaction with service in Narcotics Anonymous. So I start going to meetings and I hear this, you can't keep what you have unless you give it away. I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean? Tell me what that means. And like the person, they'd say, you know, this person chairing the meeting, you know, they're doing that to help them in their recovery. You know, they're giving of their time and their energy to help the addict who still suffers. And I'm like, I want to know more of how to do that. And, you know, our area was small in the beginning. You know, it was very small. The Little Apple area was small. It's very large today and it has branched off into many other areas. And it's just a great story of Narcotics Anonymous growth. And hopefully you all have one or get to know one on your journey. So many of those people that taught me and mentored me in my early recovery are still clean today and still of service today. And it's funny how that works. But and I might jump around a little bit because there's just so much that goes on in my head about this topic, you know. And we hear about, in life in general, there's about 10% of the population that participates in service. You know, that whether it's be some social outing and you're the person that's helping your friends clean up after the communion party or the this or the that, you know, if you're that person, you're probably of service in Narcotics Anonymous. Or wherever you go, if you help, you know, Thanksgiving dinner, you volunteer to go help in the kitchen with the dishes. Some of us just have that in our nature. It's just in our nature. And I think that that's what's happened to me. You know, cause I can remember, you know, one of my ex-mother-in-laws, you know, she'd be in the kitchen and I'd go ask to help it in spite of myself, you know, with the dishes. But, so anyways, the 10% are the folks that, you know, and you see those same people at your area service committee and the same people serving on convention committees and the same people doing H&I, because if they didn't, who would? I don't know. You got to ask yourself that. So I know that in the great life that I get to have today and with the lovely women in my life, I encourage them to be of service. You know, it's a learned behavior in some cases. But anyway, so I get this thing about, you know, you can't keep what you have unless you give it away. And these people in the Little Apple area, you know, it was a small area, so everybody had to do something. We all had to do something if we were going to make it happen. You know, and so they said, you come to area service, girl. You know, and I was 28 years old at the time, and that was a long time ago. And I had nothing else to do. I had nothing else to do except it was either use or participate in Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't have any kids at the time. You know, I didn't have any animals. I had no family at the time nearby. You know, I lived in a recovery house. It was just like, all right, I needed to get away from those chicks, so I'll go do what you're doing. And they said, we'll pick you up and we'll bring you. And I used to go to this area service committee that would start, subcommittees would start meeting at 11. And we're all in the same facility and, we got to store our literature there and subcommittees would start at 11 and then ASC would start at 2. And if we were lucky, we'd all be home at midnight. Back in those days. I know. And today I get the eyeballs in the can area. If area goes past 5, oh my God, people act like they're going to die. Please give me a break, you know. And yes, I'm old school in that way. And I have 30 years clean. So, it goes way back. It goes way back. So anyway, and I used to think that was awesome, man. And chairs would be flying. These were my kind of people. They were passionate about what the fuck was going on in Narcotics Anonymous. And the growth in Narcotics Anonymous, right? Right? They were passionate, and I wanted to be a part of that. I did. I wanted to step up. I'm in. I'm all in, man. I am all in. And, you know, and there was just so much drama. You know, there was so much drama. And, you know, back in, and like I said, a little area, and we started, you know, the other fellowship had what was called a rainbow group. And all of our addicts were going there, and we were losing addicts to the other fellowship. So they decided to start a primarily gay and lesbian meeting. And of course, today, in today's fellowship, we have what some might call special interest meetings across the world. But back 30 years ago, it was like, oh man, you know, that's a violation of our traditions and this and that. And, you know, it just was this big thing. And we started, you know, and we had another meeting that was primarily Spanish speaking, so that our Latino community could understand what the fuck was going on, right? And there were people throwing chairs about this and telling us we were all going to die and this and that and the other thing. We said, screw you. Be on your way, okay, because this is the Narcotics Anonymous way. And what happened was we opened the door to our fellowship to these folks, you know, and it just grew and grew and grew. And it was amazing. It was amazing to be a part of that at that ground level of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and again, some of those people are still, or a lot of those people are still clean today that participated in opening up these meetings and these doors. And every door that we could open to carry the message is a good door. And there was no violation of traditions or anything like that. It was all very transparent and awesome. And so that was just an example. You know, as time went on, we learned how to be a little less violent, for sure. The chair stopped being thrown, but area services, we'd break for dinner. You know, we would break for dinner, and it was no big deal. And I learned all about our service structure, you know, and I got to be a part of a lot of really super cool things. Like, and I lived in, it was a city, but there were rural areas, and so we had things like outreach committees where, like, you would drive an hour out, you know, somewhere or 2 hours out to take a meeting once a week to open the doors to the community. And I got to watch, you know, that the same guy would show up every time we'd go up there for outreach. And eventually that guy said, you know what, I want to make this a home group, you know. And I got to learn about home groups and that meetings don't belong to people, by the way. When I first moved to the area that I live in, the meetings didn't have, like, real names. That was like Joe's meeting and Sue's meeting and Sam's meeting. Oh, no, 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 no. That doesn't happen. And if it's happening where you live, stop it. Stop it. That's putting personalities before principles. So stop that stuff. But anyways, like, that didn't exist where I was at. It just didn't happen. I'm like, what the fuck is this Paul meeting shit, you know? Anyway, excuse my French, but I get passionate about this stuff. So I get the opportunity. I've participated in all aspects of Narcotics Anonymous service, and I've held many, many, many positions in Narcotics Anonymous, and most of which I have completed or fulfilled my commitments, except I had a baby in there somewhere, so I had to, like, give up my commitment for a while. But let me talk about what happens to me today, you know, and I had the best compliment on God's green earth from my sponsor, who she said to me, I told her what my topic was, and she said, this is a perfect topic for you. I'm like, why do you say that? And she goes, because you serve with humility. And I said, you didn't know me when I had about 5 or 10 years clean. Because when I was chairing that area service committee, I was the queen of Narcotics Anonymous, and you were going to do what I told you to do. But along with this service comes step work, mind you, okay? So I learned a lot about myself in the process, and I've also learned how to communicate with my fellow human beings. You know, through the process of service, and service in Narcotics Anonymous has taught me how to be a better employee. It's taught me how to be a better friend. It's taught me how to be a better mentor, a better sponsor, a better partner in my relationship with my husband. I've learned so much about traditions. I had the opportunity when our Guide to Local Service first came out to do workshops on that, because I actually read it. You know, and I didn't just hypothesize about it or posture about it or whatever the case may be. And the same thing with our guiding principles when they were workshopping that before it ever became a book. You know, we get to participate in those things. Girl, what's up? Hey! and this is the other thing. You know, I get to meet people from all walks of life, from all across the country, from the East Coast to the West Coast. But, you know, and my sponsor said that to me, and I you know, today's meditation was about humility, you know, and I don't necessarily look at myself that way, because I was so bossy for so long, you know, and today I just try to go with the flow, and you know, I've learned. And like I said, I had all these different positions in service, and I've chaired convention committees and PR and H&I and literature and secretary and the chair of the area and all those things. But my favorite thing to do is be a sponsor. It's my favorite service. I love the women that I sponsor to the end of the earth. And, you know, I kind of bug them every now and then. I just texted one. I said, hey, we need to get together. We need to have face-to-face. You know, and I just love to sit down with them in their living room and just talk. We were supposed to do some step work tonight, but it's okay, because I just get to know you a little bit better, and your dogs and your cats and your daughter and whatever it may be. It doesn't matter. You know, that's my very favorite service, that I get to be and I get to participate in with my sponsor. You know, and, today I get to, I do public relations stuff, because I can. I am, and that is not an aspect of Narcotics Anonymous service. That's for everybody. You know, because some people cannot take that risk of being known as an addict. And, You know, I get the opportunity to do that, and I've had the opportunity for my whole recovery. And it wasn't on purpose that it started out that way. I remember my first job, my first real job clean. I told my boss, I said, I got the job in September, and I needed some time off in November to go to court, and I didn't know if I was coming back. And I said, I need some time off to go to court. And I said, I need some time off. He goes, what do you need time off for? I said, I have to go to this other city. And he goes, oh, you got court? And I'm like, what? What? He goes, don't you think I looked into you before I hired you? And I'm like, okay. And it was a small private employer. And I ended up working for him for like 13 years, but he had a hard time letting go. But anyway, so right out from the gate, that's just the way it was for me, you know. And then I went, when I came to, when we moved from Pennsylvania to Arizona, my first real job in Pennsylvania was I worked for the Mojave County Sheriff's Office. And with a background like mine, I never would have thought that I would have gotten a job like that. And I got to be of service. And that's the other thing about service for me. I don't just get to be of service in Narcotics Anonymous. I get to be of service in my community today. I get to be of service in my job, however that may be. And some of my jobs have allowed me to be of more service than others. You know, I get to be of service in my home. My husband is older than me. You know, and that requires, I think, sometimes more patience than other days. But anyway, so I get this job at the sheriff's office, right? And I was a cop hater, you know. And, I mean, I was that chick that was like, fuck you, pigs, and all. It's just awful. So here I get to make this living amends. Right. And all these young men, they're all young men. They're almost young enough to be my sons, you know, so I get to bake cookies for them. And, you know, and I do and I did. And, you know, and I just get to be nice to them when most of the world isn't nice to them. And so I'm in there one day and I'm getting ready to leave. And I have a N.A. bag with a tote bag from a convention with some stuff in it. And this one of these deputies walks by and he goes, keep coming back. I'm like, what do you know about this process? And he goes, I used to be a DJ in L.A. at like tons of N.A. events. I'm like, oh, God bless your little heart. But anyway, So there again, you know, it was like, that's the way it is. And, you know, and part of my service there was I got to educate these guys who thought, you know, who believed the lie that once an addict, always an addict. And I got to tell them that's a lie. It's a lie. You love me, don't you? And they're like, of course, we adore you. You know, and I'm like, well, who do you think I was? You know, who do you think I am? And so it was a little bit eye opening for them. Hopefully some of their eyes are still open in that way. But and you know, I still get to have a few of them are my friends. And I moved on and went elsewhere, you know, to a different job. But you know, so service for me, and there's this other thing that popped into my head before I started to share, and I try not to think about this and ask God that his words come out of my mouth, except all those cuss words, which, again, I'm really sorry for. Narcotics Anonymous is the only place you could say fucking God in the same sentence. But anyhow, I got to move on. is my recovery based in service, or is my service based in recovery? And I had to ask myself, because I will judge yours on that, you know, because I've heard people go, if it wasn't for this service commitment, I wouldn't be clean. And I want to go, no, you can't have that. You can't. I know for me, you can have whatever you need to have that keeps you coming back. But for me, I got to have, my service needs to be based in recovery. You know, and I'm so grateful that those folks, and I hate to use the term NA Nazis, but that's what they were. I mean, they were like super passionate about this whole gig, like I said. And many of them, so many of them are still clean today. And they were like, you need to work the steps or die, you know what. You know, and that was like the business, man. And you know, and the women in my life, you know, I don't necessarily push to them, you know, work the steps or die at the MF, but we definitely work the steps. Because I think that if we don't, we will die. You know, we will die. And it'll be a slow spiritual death and eventually a physical death. I was telling somebody sitting out front here, and we were having the meeting before the meeting about watching this disease live and in person, because my 28-year-old son is an active heroin addict. You know, and every guy that's standing on the corner with a sign that says hungry, I ask myself, is that my baby? Is that my baby? And not today, but it may be. And I get to see the degradation of the disease. And I keep coming back here because I don't want that to be my life, and I don't want it to be your life. I don't want it to be your life either, ever. I wouldn't wish this on anyone. I really wouldn't. And just to watch that process and the denial, the depth of denial and the self-hatred and the disbelief that anybody cares about him, you know. And I lived that same mindset for years, that nobody really gave a damn and I wasn't hurting anybody. And I get here and I see that that was a lie. You know, that's all that the disease does is lie to me. You know, and when I want the truth, when I want the truth about my life, and what my life can be, I look to our literature. And don't get me wrong, I believe some of you. I don't believe all of you. I believe some of you. And I believe those of you who walk this walk. You know, when we were talking about this outside and about how we touch each other, you know, and like when we hug each other in those days that we can hug each other, how we can feel that goodness, or maybe that not so goodness, you know. I want to feel that goodness in people, you know. I want to feel that, and I get to do that, you know, by coming here and by showing up. And you know, I'm gonna probably, and how much time do I have? Because
8 minutes.
Okay, cool. I have a list of defects of character. I don't know if you do, but I do. And one of them is that I'm lazy. And you would never guess it by looking at me, because I'm like, I'm pretty much on the go. Like I go to work every day, and then I go to the gym, and then I'll go to a meeting, or I have a date, or I go here, I go there, I got this to do, I got that to do, da 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 da. You know, we're going away for the weekend, blah 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 blah, all that good stuff. But none of it, or most of it, I don't really want to do. I go to work because I need the money, okay? I got to pay bills, that sort of thing, you know? I go to meetings and I'm of service because I know it's good for me. I know it's good for me. And it gives me the life that I get to have today. And don't get me wrong, it's not always that mindset, but there are days where I don't want to do it. I don't want to. We had a PR workshop last month, and I just knew nobody was going to show up because it's PR and it's COVID, and, you know, PR is like boring. It's not super fun, blah, blah, blah. So I'm at the workshop. 5 people showed up. I thought that was a major score. 5 people showed up. Yep, it was a major score. And, you know, I got 2 new phone line volunteers and somebody to hand out literature at, you know, out in the community. So that was super cool. But I don't always want to do these things, you know, but I'm fully aware. Again, I go back to that process of the steps that has taught me self-awareness. And here's what your head says to you, Chris, but that's not what your feet have to say. Okay, it's not what my feet have to say. My feet do all the bossing in my life. You know, they are how I show up. And there's like a handy, cool little expression that I just learned recently, but I can't think of it right now. But, you know, that's the most important thing, that I walk the walk, you know, and not just talk the talk. And, you know, I get the benefits of this, and you know, I didn't know that there was going to be great spiritual benefits in service. I didn't know that when I first got clean. They just told me, you know, like I said, they dragged me by the hand. Oh, and they gave me a leather briefcase for area. was so cool. I still have it today. It's 30 years old. They're like, we're going to make you a GSR, and you're going to have this little briefcase. I'm like, oh, God, it's beautiful. Thank you. And, and all that good stuff. They just took me by the hand, and I said, okay. You know, and I got to tell you, that's pretty much how I got clean, because they took me out of the nut ward at the hospital and said, we think you belong over here to the detox. And I said, okay, I'm going with you. And then they said, we think you should go to a recovery house. I said, okay, I'm going. Okay. I was the utter picture of willingness. And people were asking, you know, saying, what are you grateful for the other day on Facebook, all that stuff. I said, willingness. I'm grateful that after 30 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm still willing to show up and do this, you know. And I wish everybody was, you know. Anyway, and if I always, I've had this gnarly little belief that, you know, when you come here and you get what you need and you hit the road, you're a thief. You're an NA thief. And I'm glad to say that I'm not that today. But like I said, I didn't think I was going to get these spiritual benefits, this deep down, really cool inside shit. Didn't think that was going to happen. I just wanted to stay clean. And I didn't want to feel the way that I felt before I got here. I wanted to look in the mirror and be okay with the person that I saw there. And today I get that. I totally get it. And so much more. I have an idol in life, and she's not a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And when I think about unconditional service and service with no strings attached, and I know she's kind of an outside issue, but I'm going to bring her in there anyway, is Mother Teresa, you know, and what she did and where she went on God's green earth to take care of those who are still suffering. You know, and I know, like with the PR gig that I have, you know, I expressed in our area that it's important, especially now because of COVID. We have lost more members who just, for whatever reason, you know what I mean? Just they couldn't do the Zoom thing or they realized that maybe for a couple of months without meetings, they're okay. Pray for them, you know, pray for them. And we were talking about this, the meeting before the meeting, the rate of addiction is up. It's just scary. It's just so scary. I said, we have to get back out there. I'm taking the risk, you know, mask up. Let's go. Let's do it. You know, we've got to let them know that we're here, you know, however we can do that. You know, and if we have to teach them how to use Zoom, and I know, like, in our community, our local mental health services are helping, and those, some of them are helping in that area, you know. But we've got, you know, our meeting list now has not just our physical in-person meetings, but access tells people how to get to meetings online, you know. And we've got a kid in our area, I think that he was a Zoom, we call them Zoom babies now, you know. But however we got to get them, but we have to continue to carry the message. We have to, no matter what the times, you know, are or what they bring, we have to, because people die, as we all know. And I get to live today. I get to live today because somebody chose to be a service to me. Period. And I hope that I can make that possible for somebody else. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, thank you for sharing. I'm pleased to introduce Tim B. from Scottsdale. Yeah!
Hi, I'm Tim. I'm an addict.
Hi, Tim.
Oh, man, and I'm nervous. Thanks, Chris. I hope to do even close to as good. So I want to share, like, you know, they say miracles happen around here, and I want to share a small miracle, kind of a big miracle for me, that happened because of this convention, and it was kind of an aha moment for me. So I've been in this hotel a few different times for ARCNA conventions, And during those conventions, I probably spent more time in the card room than I did at meetings. And today, I've been in the casino twice, once to go to breakfast and once to go to lunch to get a takeout order, and that's the total amount of time that I spent in there. And I got to tell you that that is a direct result of working the steps. Because there was a point in time when, you know, like, because, you know, I gave some thought. I'd be lying to you if I told you that I didn't think about what I was going to say or plan what I was going to say or anything like that, because the truth of the matter is that service is super important to me. I'll probably end up tearing up in this thing because this deal of ours saves lives, you know, and it saved my life. You know, my sponsor that passed away a number of years ago, and I got a new sponsor now. You know, I've been clean since July 24th, 1986, and part of that is, yeah, that's part of my ego, and part of it, you know, I'm not going to lie to you, like, I've been clean a while, you know, and it's like, and part of that is that because of Narcotics Anonymous, I haven't had to pick up a day at a time in spite of my bad choices, in spite of all the other forms and manifestations of my addiction. Because like I was starting to say about my old sponsor, he used to always remind me, it's like, Tim, dope is what got you here, you know? And it's like, and so over those 34 years, I've had lots of opportunities to be of service. What I can tell you is I haven't taken advantage of all those opportunities. What I can tell you is that, you know, and there's people in this room that are part of this region that have continued to show up since day one. I'm not one of those people. You know, what I can tell you is that I started being of service when I first got here. I was part of the first ARCNA committee. Not because they told me that, like, I got to give it away to keep it. It was because the chair of the convention, she had a really hot friend. You know, honest to God. You know, and unfortunately, that real hot friend, she didn't keep doing this shit, and she ended up dying. You know, now the convention chair, you know, like you're talking about, people that are of service and continue to be of service, they generally stick around, you know. By the grace of God, I went through a little, well, not the hiatus part, but the fact that I stayed clean through walking away from NA and not doing what you guys told me and not being a service, somehow I got a big God, and I was able to stay clean. But what I can tell you is that my lifestyle became very familiar to who I was when I was out there. And when I came back, I made service a priority, and I still do. So like I said, I was asked to speak about this topic, I thought I did a lot of prayer and a lot of meditation and a lot of reflection to, like, all the gifts that I've gotten from being of service. You know, because, like, when I got here, I was a loner. I just as soon not have anything to do with you whatsoever. So, like, being of service got me around a bunch of different people. That first convention committee, there was, like, lots of people. And, yeah, there was chair throwing, you know. And it's like we have gotten a lot better as a fellowship. We don't throw near as many chairs. More recently, in the last couple of years, I've seen some things that have reminded me of the old days. But, yeah, we've come a long ways, you know. You know, as you were speaking, there was something I completely forgot about. You know, it's like one of my first quote-unquote bigger service commitments was so the first holiday marathon that I went to, it saved my life, literally, because I was in a marriage that she chose to keep using and I chose not to. She chose to be hanging out with somebody else on New Year's Eve, and I chose to be at the marathon. And I wish I could tell you that it was all good because I was at the marathon, but that's not the way it was. You know, it's like I wanted to kill him, I wanted to kill her, and I wanted to kill just about anybody that got in my face. And so this fellow Tommy, he's of service. In fact, he ended up working for Royal Service for a while. But he's a big part of our fellowship at the time, and he was one of the guys that taught me that, you know, like, eventually you're going to have to get, like, real, real with the way you feel. And it was like, feel? I mean, I knew one feeling when I got here, and I thought it was anger. And it's like what I was filled with rage. And it's like, and over a period of time, through working steps, through getting a sponsor, through showing up at a home group, you know, so some of the gifts that I got from service, you know. So here's the if I say nothing else, I want you to hear this, okay? The topics of this conversation is, or of this workshop is, and it is a conversation, and service is a conversation. But the topic is, like, the importance of being of service. Here it is. You ready? as Billy would say. You ready for this? So, an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, and learn a new way to live. And that's the message. And like our fifth tradition tells us that the primary purpose for any group is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. That's it, long and short. I mean, we can like talk all sorts of large shit and boost our egos about how much of service we are, but when it really comes right down to it, what it's about is making sure that a dope fiend like me doesn't stick a needle in my arm and doesn't take your life, okay, or take my own. So that's where it's at, you know, and that's what personally motivates me about being of service. And I've done a lot of different kinds of service. And so like what I was talking about is my first quote-unquote bigger service commitment was, so the next year when that marathon started talking about happening, guess what I did? It's like it saved my life the year before. So like I suited up, showing up, and I had no clue how to do that. But you guys taught me how, you know, and it's like, and together we were able to pull off another holiday marathon, and there was a place for addicts to go during the holidays. And that wasn't me, you know, that was God and us that did that. So some of the things that I've learned from being a service, and I have no idea if I can do this. It's weird because I can blow soul forever, like especially in small groups or even large groups of people. But when I first get started, I think, you know, there's nothing I got to say. You know, I have nothing to say. But anyway, the gifts that I've gotten, you know, at the very beginning, we smoked a lot in meetings, you know, when I got clean. You know, there was no such thing as vaping. And, you know, I'm back from the day of payphones, okay? So, you know, like cell phones weren't even a thing. Anyway, they told me, like, clean up the ashtrays. I looked at them like, what are you talking about? You know, because nobody told me what to do. You know, and I wasn't one of those people that was, like, real tidy. I was the kind of person that would, like, throw the beer bottle from the living room to the kitchen over the motorcycle, and it would, like, break all over the place. And the class would lay there for God knows how long until, like, I finally had the urge to clean it up. So tidy was not cleanliness and not, like, being clean. That definitely was far from my imagination. But, like, being clean and tidy, that wasn't something that was in my realm. So I started by cleaning up ashtrays, you know, and pretty soon I became more tidy. Home group, okay? You know, when I started thinking about this whole, like, workshop, I thought, man, I hope it doesn't end up sounding like a service resume, you know? But there's a lot of different things that I have done that I've been blessed by. You know, it's like I was having some conversation with some addicts on Thanksgiving. There's a bunch of addicts that chose to come to this convention a couple days before the convention and got together, and there was just big fellowshipping going on. And it's like, and it was a beautiful thing because there was addicts that I knew in recovery and there was addicts that I didn't know, but that I got to know, you know. And we were just sharing about the beauty of recovery and all the different things that we can learn from one another. So back to a home group, you know, it's like the things that I learned from a home group is having business meetings, you know, in a home group. Because, like, I'll tell you one of the things, and I'll get back to that, that really touched me about Narcotics Anonymous that helped me hear the message early on. So somebody chose to be of service. A gal that I used to get high with, and this was not long, but 3 years before I got clean, she'd gone off to treatment. And she came back to where I happened to work for a short period of time, because by the time I got clean, I had 40 jobs for every year I had been alive. And I got clean at 26 because I lived past 25. Anyway, she came back to work, and I couldn't get her high. And I was one of the people that got the people high when they came back from treatment, and with no shame. You know, and so it's like I pulled her aside, said, Jackie, what gives? You know, you're not going to go out partying with us or anything else. And she goes, no, man, I started doing this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. And I was like, and I knew shit. I didn't know shit about Narcotics Anonymous. You know, the only anonymous thing I'd ever heard of, my old man died of this disease. And so when I was a little kid, I used to tell my old man, go to AA, you can stop drinking. So that's the only even close to total concept that I had. Because by the time I got here, I didn't know. She literally was the only person that I knew that didn't use. So she told me that she said, Tim, this is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs, mood, mind-altering drugs, because she knew me. I thought I could smoke pot and drink beer and not shoot speed or do acid, which were, you know, kind of the things that I did on a real regular basis, except for when I was just smoking pot. And so those times became shorter and shorter, you know, and the times that I stayed strung out become longer and longer. You know, I was hearing somebody share the other earlier this weekend, you know, and thinking about, you know, I didn't know nothing about service before I got here. You know, my ideas were services that I sold you the dope that wasn't cut or not cut much. You know, it's like I let up on, you know, being nasty with you because, you know, for whatever reason I chose to let up. And that I really didn't know anything about being a service. I heard somebody share about, you know, his kid being born and having to go out and cop. You know, it's like, and I could totally relate to that, you know, because my youngest daughter at the time was 3 years old when I first got clean. And I came down off of a several day acid run to like long enough for her mom to give birth, come home, and then go back out. So I didn't know anything about being a service. And when you guys, when I got here, you guys told me it's like, give it away to keep it. And that was totally foreign to me. But I did what you told me. I picked up the ashtrays. I helped set up. They told me to get a home group, get a sponsor, start working steps. And what I want to say about that whole like service-based recovery, recovery-based service thing is that, yeah, I judge sometimes. I'm not going to lie to you. It's like, and sometimes I judge myself because I have fit into both of those categories. But what I can tell you is because of working steps, I've been able to better be of service both to our fellowship and to my community. You know, because of working steps and staying around here a while and staying clean, it's like I was a scout leader. My son's 25. My son's never seen me get loaded. You know, I was a scout leader. That's a pretty big deal because I got kicked out at Weeblos for getting high. You know, I don't know if you don't know what Weeblos is, but it's the thing between Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts. So, you know, like I've got taught around here how to be of service both to our fellowship and to my community. And remember, what I think, and I don't know about what you think, and I don't necessarily think our literature necessarily says it other than our fit tradition, about our primary purpose is to carry the message. It's like the bottom line is the importance of being of service is it saves lives. It's like it reminds using addicts and people in the rooms already that aren't using that, like I can stop using, lose the desire to use, and learn a new way to live. And what I can tell you is that service has been one of the biggest things that have helped me fulfill on the last part of that message as far as learning how to live. Working steps, being of service, and then like turning it, you know, like, so I was going to first identify as like, I'm Tim, I'm an addict, you know, I suffer from being a service junkie, and I've also been like really inspired by it, you know, it's like, but there's been times that I've been of service and I've lost track of my daily prayer or meditation, my daily 10-step, my willingness to take a look at myself and my own bullshit and how much self-will and ego is running the show. And so what's happened is, you know, I'm one of those dope fiends that got to hit my head pretty hard against the wall before I'm willing to do something about it. But it always happens. You know, it's like, you know, I had a gal from the Pacific Northwest. She moved down to Arizona. She was coming back and forth for a while. And she yanked my covers a few years back because I had all these service commitments. You know, it's like I was committee chair for this and that and another thing. And given at any different point in time, if somebody would have tried telling me, it's like, you know, like you're running from your life, you know, from doing service, I'd have said, you're like, fuck you, and not listen to it. You know, but she said it in such a way, she says, so like, you know, why do you have all these commitments and what is going on? And, you know, and like, and what I got in touch with was that I had hit a point, and I, it's not that I wasn't working steps, but I got a good way of like working steps, and it's beautiful that our four-step ask you, is there anything you haven't talked about, you know? Because there's sometimes that I can glaze over a situation and not tell you the complete truth, you know, and it's like, at that point in time, what was going on was, I still got some feelings about it. So like, one of the guys that's been of service to this convention, he was showing me, a picture of our old sponsor earlier today. And so what was going on at that point in time was, I did not want to sit with the sadness of his departure. I'm still real bad at grief. You know, it's like the way I dealt with grief most of my life is before I got clean, I'd get loaded, you know. After I got clean, I would gamble a lot, You know, it's like a ride as fast as I could or drive as fast as I could or overwork. Break shit. You know, it's like be violent. And what I can tell you is that to a very large degree, with the exception of maybe work, I don't do a lot of that stuff anymore. You know, it's like I'm still very much of service to the fellowship, not so much in my community anymore, although I am building administrator for our two building high-rise HOA that I live in. And sometimes I wonder why the hell I do that, but it's because you guys reminded me to be of service, you know, like be where my feet are and don't shit where I eat, you know. And it's like, and if I show up and be of service, there's a better chance that I won't be an ass to my neighbors because, you know, it's like if I'm supposed to be taking responsibility for something. It's just like around here, like when I wear NA garb, especially when I go out on the street and I'm wearing NA garb, I remind myself it's like, you know, hey, I got something NA on. I need to not be a dick, you know, when I'm interacting with people. And it's good that I remind myself of that, you know, because I am at my nature. You know, the thing about nature, you know, like people anymore in the fellowship, you know, they think I'm outgoing and gregarious and everything else. And truth be told, my nature is probably being more of an introvert and definitely self-centered and self-absorbed, you know. But you guys have taught me how to do something different. So back to that home group thing, it's like in business meetings. Yeah, I got way off track. I go on tangents. But the good news is sometimes I actually remember where I was at back then. So they taught me about having a prudent reserve, okay? And, you know, and eventually they roped me and railroaded me and volunteered me to be the GSR, and so I got to experience the chair-throwing at area. But the biggest lesson early on that I learned was, you know, in homebrew meetings, we talked about a budget and having a prudent reserve for the group to make sure that we had enough money for coffee and for literature and for our rent. And you know what? I didn't know shit about that when I got here because I always had hustle. I could always make money and always did. I had a real hard time hanging on to it because I was footloose and fancy free. But you guys taught me it's like, hey, it's a really important thing to have a budget and to save money and have enough for the future. And so I started doing that. And that was one of the biggest first lessons I learned. And then there was the thing about being GSR and going to area. And like I told you, when I got here, I was, I think one of the biggest things that helped me, and it's not service related, but it's definitely personal recovery related, is my sponsor had three other guys that he sponsored. He probably had more, but at this point in time, and he got us together once a week, and it wasn't a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, but we got real, real every single week. We called it the Fierce Finance, Sex, and Resentment Group. And we talked about those topics. And I truly to this day credit us doing that every week with staying clean. Because a couple things happened. It's like, one, I did my first four step with a priest because I wasn't going to give myself up. And he knew something about recovery. And he told me, he says, so you got a sponsor? And that kind of freaked me out. It's like, we're under surveillance. And it's like, he said, no. So he goes, here's the deal. Instead of three Hail Marys and three Our Fathers, he goes, I want you to read this to your sponsor. So that sponsor, I read it with him. And then my sponsor tells me, he says, so I want you to tell five people. And I said, you're full of shit. That ain't ever going to happen. But what he did is he started this group of these guys. And we got together each week. And we got dropped down real with one another. And from that experience and becoming a GSR, as I learned how to not live inside my own head all the time. I learned how to give myself up and be with other people. I wish I could tell you that I got real good at it right away, and I continue to be that way, but I haven't. You know, it's like I'm pretty good today at it, but yeah, it's 34 years later. You know. You know, I went through what I call a spiritual Sahara. I've always had this, because I got raised real religious, and I had a real hard time with that when I got here. Today, I'll tell you straight up, I have a God that I don't understand, but I know for sure, absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt, that keeps me clean and keeps a lot of us clean and keeps me safe and sound when I've made some really poor choices and put myself in shitty situations, even in clean time. You hear that thing about being clean, living dirty. I've been there. okay? It's like 6 or 7 years I stopped doing, which I stopped being a service. You know, it's like I wasn't, you know, marathons, they could like never happen again as far as I was concerned. H&I commitments, you know, my, and just so you know, I haven't talked much about it, but H&I is like near and dear to my heart. To this day, I still do H&I stuff. One of my very first commitments was I lived in the North Valley of the Phoenix area, up north past where the 101 is, and I did this DOC treatment center down on Buckeye Road. And if you guys, that's a distance. And I'd get on my motorcycle and I'd ride down there every Monday night. And I'm so grateful for that because it taught me stuff like, so I told you I was going to tell you some of the stuff I've learned from, and that's one of the things I learned from service, is I learned persistence and tenacity. You know, I heard already about like how like there's sometimes I don't want to do that. There's sometimes I don't want to show up for a committee meeting or write another friggin' report for some subcommittee or whatever. And there was plenty of times in that early recovery that I didn't want to go down to cortisone. And it's like, but I did. And I always got lit up afterwards. I'm always grateful that I went. And to this day, when I don't want to go to an H&I meeting that I'm like speaking at or chairing, and I show up, I still get lit up behind it. You know, it's not like fancy service like a convention chair or whatever, but the bottom line, and there's nothing wrong with all that, because I've done a lot. I haven't ever been a convention chair, but I've done a lot of that other woo-woo kind of stuff. But H&I, man, it saves lives. You know, it's like when I thought about this topic, one of the very first things I thought of, and I wasn't going to share it, but I'm going to anyway, is that whole starfish story. You know, it's like there's a story, and I don't know if you've heard it, you know, it's like, but there's a kid with his old man walking down the beach, and the kid's throwing starfish back into the ocean. And the old man's going like, why are you doing that? They're all going to die. And he goes, yeah, but if one of them lives, you know, and it's like, and that's the way I feel about it, because, you know, like when Jackie 12-stepped me, it was 3 years before I made it into a meeting. But by the grace of God, when I finally hit my bottom and picked up the phone, I said, hey, you still doing that that Narcotics Anonymous thing? She goes, yeah. She goes, you high? And I said, yeah. And she says, well, when you start to come down, you ain't going to want to go. I said, when's the meeting? I'll be there, you know? And that's another thing I wanted to thank. I want to thank all of the different facets. I mean, there's so many ways to be a service. I mean, as simple as emptying ashtrays, opening the doors, you know, being a sponsor, being part of the support group, being part of those five guys or those five gals or whoever it is. It's like being an ear for an addict going through it, you know. Yeah, I lost track. Anyway, I've been given huge gifts, you know. It's like I've been given the gift of tenacity, you know, as far as like following through when I didn't want to, integrity. You know, it's like I wasn't an integrous person when I got here. It's like I was going to tell you whatever the hell you needed to hear so that I would be accepted, you know, or that I could get what I wanted, you know. And it's like, and what service has taught me that it's like it's really important to me, and it's important for our fellowship too, that I do, that we do what we say we're going to do when we say we're going to do it. You know, and I've learned that a lot in H&I service, because the bottom line is like, you know, we carry the message, we carry meetings into facilities, and it's really important that we don't end up with egg all over our face if we don't show up, you know. And I've been guilty of it, you know, where I haven't even picked up the phone. It's like, and I had to be the one to like own that shit, you know. And I've learned how to do that. I've learned how to say like, I'm wrong. That's a real big, that may not seem like much for many of you, and I know for some of you, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But for me to say that, like, I was wrong, does not come easy, you know. And it's like, and I'm just now getting to the point where I can say, I was wrong, I'm sorry, you know, because for a long time I could just say, like, I was wrong and leave it alone, you know. It's like, and not even consider the possibility that, how I was wrong and how I delivered that way of being wrong was like way out of line. And you know, I've heard plenty of people's feelings. You know, there was I was sharing with somebody the other night about tone. You know, that's another thing that you guys taught me, is like how to communicate well and how to communicate better. I had no, like I said, when I got here, I had no interest in communicating with you. My vocabulary was pretty short, and it's like at the risk of dropping an F-bomb. My vocabulary was pretty much like, fuck you, I don't care. So, like, you guys have given me a ton of gifts that I've gotten through service, and it's like, I can sit up here or stand up here today and tell you, you know, it's like, I'm kind, and I'm generous, and I'm loving, and I'm empathetic, and I'm compassionate, and I'm all open and honest. I'm honest, open-minded, and willing most of the time, you know, because I didn't get here that way. I got here, like, willing, and then sort of got open-minded, and way later got honest. So, you know, and for me to stand up here and tell you, because the qualities that I just shared with you, you know, I was listening to Jimmy Kay the other day, you know, he talked about, like, we don't change much. But what he was talking about is that, like, we don't change much from the core of who we were designed to be to begin with, because we were born pure love. You know, and I was so far away from that pure love by the time I got here that I wondered if there was, like, when you guys talked about being restored to sanity, I didn't know that I'd ever been sane. You know, and today, I'm a pretty decent human being most of the time. You know, it's like I'm definitely no angel or no saint, but I'm way, you know, like there's that joke as far as like, you know, you've come so far, but you had so far to come, you know, and it's like that's pretty much who I am. And I know I got a long ways to go yet, but I have, you know, people say time don't mean shit, but I'll tell you what. It's like I have the experience of this thing working really, really, really well for 6 to 7 years because I was willing to do the deal. And then I also have the experience of about 4 years where I said, fuck off to all of you. I didn't make meetings about every 4 months whether I needed one or not. Didn't work any steps, didn't have a sponsor, and somehow did not get loaded. And then I came back and I thought, you know, you guys told me to do the basics. It's like get a sponsor, work steps, be a service to the fellowship, go to meetings, and I did that stuff. And lo and behold, my life has changed again, over and over and over and over again. And it's not like, you know, I've had way many ups and downs in the 34 years and the past 20 years, but the bottom line is that I haven't had to get loaded no matter what. And, you know, when somebody calls me up and says, hey, Tim, will you do this for us? You know, it's like generally I can say yes, but I've also learned how to say no because I've learned a little bit about like self-care. You know, it's like I won't take on too many service commitments anymore. But and, you know, and I'm really the only one that can define what's too much and what's not enough. You know, it's like today kind of my gauge is like if I think I can be true to the commitment and effective in the form of service that I'm being requested to do, I'll do it. If I don't think I can, then I say no, you know, regardless, irregardless. So anyway, I'm grateful to be clean. I'm grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we have our fellow, most recently I've read a lot and talked to as many old timers, long timers that came before me that still remember, you know, I've taken, and yeah, we can laugh about it, but you know, like at the age I'm at now, 61, the bottom line is that, yeah, I forget stuff from the old days, you know, it's like, and so the guys I'm talking to, they go even further back and they don't remember it all super clear, but I have a love for our fellowship, you know, because we're not, when it comes right down to it, we're not really, there's not a lot asked of us, you know, it's like, it's great because everybody in this room is probably of service. I would say the large majority of us. And if you're not, please, you're more than welcome, and I invite you, and because there's huge benefits to it. And my hope is that we find a way to communicate to other members like the importance of the life-saving message that we carry every time we choose to do something that is of service. Because our predecessors, you know, they did some like straight-up long, hard shit to make sure that our doors were open. You know, there was guys and gals that sold blood so that we could print our basic text. You know, there were guys that sold their Harleys so that, or a guy that did, so that, you know, our review copies could be done. You know, there's just a lot, you know, people, there's so much stuff that we don't even see that once we get out of our self-centeredness and our self-obsession, you know, we become pretty decent human beings. It's like the story that Chrissy was telling. You know, it's like, yeah, I was, yeah. So I'm going to end with this. I'll tell you a real quick story. So I was on, one of the ways I was at services for many years, I was on the board of this treatment center as a female indigent women treatment center. And back in the early 2000s, in order to get federal money, we had to be a substance abuse treatment facility instead of an alcohol treatment facility. Okay, and so there was a guy that was on the board at that. Most of the guys that were on the board and gals, they were all from the other fellowship. And anyway, I'd been invited to become a part of that at one point in time, and I learned about service, and so I chose to do it. Anyway, there was this controversy going on. And there was one guy in the meeting, we were having our annual board meeting, and he was dead set against it. He was like, no way, it's just alcohol. And I tried being like pleasant and told him, alcohol's a drug, it's a substance. You know, it ain't that big a deal. He kept going. And then it dawned on me, because of having been at chair-throwing ASCs and everything else, it's like I try to listen to like what the solution is, what the goal is, you know, and what the upset is. And it's like, and I heard his upset all of a sudden. In his mind, us dope fiends were of less character, you know? And what I can tell you is that to this day, that memory always sticks in my head because I won't use his name, but I said, yo, you know, anyway. His name was Harry. He's dead now, so it doesn't really matter. I said, like, Harry, do you really, I mean, I get that you think that we're of less character. And he goes, yeah, absolutely. And at first, you know, like who I used to be, would have reached across the table and like clocked him. And so I took a deep breath, and I realized exactly where he was at. I was meeting him where he was at, you know. And it's like, and I told him, I said, yeah, I get it. I said, and I got to tell you, there's some shit that I did in my life prior to getting to Narcotics Anonymous, and because I'm one of those that got clean, you know, and you know those. Grape guys, they told me that I was a dope fiend, so I needed to go someplace else. So, and I didn't have resentment about that. I'm grateful for that fellowship because it helped me a lot. But what I can tell you is I told them, it's like, okay, I get it. And what I can tell you is that for me, there's some stuff I regret, and there's some stuff that I'm not proud of that I did in my past, but I'm not that person today. You know, and it's like, and I can tell you guys today that I'm not that person today, nor even the person that I was when I was talking to that cat. I'm a totally different person today, and it's a direct result of working steps and being in service to the Fellowship and Narcotics Anonymous. And that's what happens is, like, I recreate, with your guys' help, my life all the time by continuing to show up. So I'm grateful to be clean. That's all I got. Thanks.